Former NFL quarterback Drew Bledsoe, owning a winery has been a long-time aspiration that would allow him to combine his passion for fine wines and love of his hometown, the Walla Walla Valley. Drew returned in 2007 to plant his original estate vineyard, McQueen, on the southern end of the Walla Walla Valley. The following year, Drew launched Doubleback, an estate-focused winery with the goal to produce world-class Cabernet Sauvignon. Since the very first release, the 2007 Cabernet Sauvignon, Doubleback has received numerous accolades, including a spot on the Wine Spectre's Top 100 list. Drew's vision, brought to life by winemaker Josh McDaniels, remains to be a premium wine experience, completely focused on quality. To further assist the vision of high-quality, estate-focused wine, Drew has acquired and planted 4 estate vineyards in the Walla Walla Valley, and recently broke ground on the future home of Doubleback Winery, which will open in 2018. Drew is committed to using only the most sustainable, superlative winemaking practices to ensure that Doubleback will be one of the best bottles of wine you will drink. We invite you to learn more about Doubleback and sign up for our mailing list at doubleback.com. That's doubleback.com.
Hear your favorite NFL legends sharing their stories and insights every week right here on Thursday Night Tailgate with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazeri. Take it away, guys.
The door is locked. There's no way out.
And now back with us and making his fifth appearance with us on Thursday Night Tailgate is Brian Finneran. Let me give you some background on Brian. Played his college ball at Villanova, where during his senior season, he earned All-American honors and won the Walter Payton Award, given to the nation's top FCS Division I AA player. That season, he caught 96 passes for just under 1,400 yards and 19 touchdowns. In 2014, he was inducted into the Villanova Sports Hall of Fame. He was an undrafted free agent signed by the Seattle Seahawks in 1999, and he played in the NFL from 99 to 2010 with the Eagles and the Falcons. He played over in NFL Europe for the Barcelona Dragons and was named All-NFL Europe. Over the course of his NFL career, he had 238 receptions for just under 3,100 yards and 19 touchdowns. Brian was a guest with us all the way back on episode number 8. In November of 2011. Here we are in episode number 325. We can't thank him enough for all the great time that he has given to us, and we're excited he is back with us tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Brian, Chris, and Bob, thanks for coming back on the show.
Welcome back.
My pleasure. I didn't realize it had been 5 times, and I sure as heck didn't realize that was the 8th episode that first time. That's great. Congratulations to you guys on your success and continued success as well.
We appreciate that very much, Brian. So, Brian, I want to start our time with you tonight by talking actually a little basketball and about your alma mater, Villanova, currently ranked in the top 5 in both polls. Anything short of a Final Four at this point, is it make it a disappointing season? What do you think?
You know what? I would tend to agree with that. It's a really good, well-coached basketball team. They have a little bit of everything Villanova does. And when you think about where they've been and things they've learned throughout the course of the last 4 or 5 years, winning a title a couple of years ago, it's a veteran-laden team, and Jalen Brunson running the point guard position, some young talent, and Amari Spellman and some other guys that just chip in. It is such a fun brand of basketball to watch when you watch Villanova hoops. So, yeah, I think so. When you're number one seed, lofty expectations, and I think they'll get an A1 seed. Maybe it's the third or fourth one seed, but they're a special basketball team, and the way Jay Wright coaches that squad is really fun to watch. So I think it's hard to put that level of expectation on a basketball team, especially when anything can happen in one game. But yeah, they're good enough to get to the Final Four, so they should be there.
And Brian, like I mentioned in your intro, you won the Walter Payton Award in 1997, which is sort of in the FCS division, the 1AA version of the Heisman Trophy. Talk about what it's like, you know, to have your name now, right, engraved in that trophy.
Yeah, it's pretty special. That was a crazy year. My junior year going into that season, I tore my lateral collateral ligament, my left knee, in the last game against JMU on a reverse of all things, and I wasn't the fleetest of foot, and I didn't run many reverses in my career at Villanova, but I did on that play, got a first down about 15 yards, and a guy fell right in the front of my knee, hyperextended it, and tore my LCL. I didn't know if I was going to play again, let alone have the season I had my senior year that you mentioned earlier, 96 catches and 19 touchdowns. We had a really good squad, but it's nice to be in that group of people. And I think Villanova is the only school to put out three Walter Payton Award winners. Brian Westbrook did it a few years after I did it, a longtime Philadelphia Eagle. And then John Robertson pulled it off most recently, quarterback for Villanova as well, that kind of did some good things. So special, special when you can get mentioned in the same breath and have an award handed to you that says Walter Payton on it. So I was blown away. It was a special event up in New York City when they presented us the award, and I was lucky enough to have a bunch of my teammates, my family members, my wife, I was married at the time, and it was as good as it gets, and I'll always cherish it, and it sits in my office today.
And then just a couple of years ago, you get inducted into the Villanova Sports Hall of Fame. You get to go back to your alma mater, and now you're in their Hall of Fame. What was that night like?
That was awesome. So they do a deal 5 years after you're done playing, you're eligible to get your jersey retired. So they did that. And I thought that was it. I didn't even realize for some reason there's an actual induction in the Villanova Hall of Fame. So I thought once I got my jersey retired and they put it up on the wall, I thought, sweet, that's awesome. And then I was done. But I guess, I think it's 15 years after you're done playing, you're eligible for the Villanova Hall of Fame. And when they called, and Dean Kenefick, the sports information director up there, called me and said I'm going to get inducted, I was just absolutely blown away. It gave me another excuse to go up to Kelly's Pub and Aaron Pub and have a few beers with some buddies and celebrate another accolade that I got up there. And again, all my teammates, I had a great quarterback in Chris Bowden, who's coaching up in New York City now, and it felt like every ball he threw me was just as catchable as it gets. And so my brother Brad, twin brother Brad, played with me at Villanova, which is special as well. So he was able to take some of the pressure off of me. When I got double teamed, we just went right to him. And so a lot of things had to come in play for me to win those awards. And I'm thankful and humbled by all of them.
Bob, questions for Brian?
Great to speak with you, Brian. And you talked about your speed a little bit and how you weren't the fastest afoot, but you were a big guy too, Brian. And once you got into the league, you either had to have fast feet, you had to be fast, or you had to run good patterns. I'm sure you had to work on your speed. Did you, and did it help you?
Absolutely. So coming out of Villanova, I was probably high 4.6 guy, 4.69, 4.68. And then I worked out with Stan Drayton, who was our running backs coach at the time. He's gone on to coach in the NFL a little bit with the Green Bay Packers and a handful of other teams. And I spent that whole spring getting ready for a possible draft opportunity, but definitely get some free agent looks and got my speed. I think I ran a 4.59, was my fastest 40, and was a consistent 4.63 guy. But like you said, with my size, my catch radius, and my ability to get in and out of routes, that's what really helped me and got me to where I am today and where I got to in the league. I ran by guys that were twice as fast as I was just on technique alone and smarts and being a savvy football player. And then I was able to get in and out of my breaks pretty good. And then the quarterbacks I played with, Chris Chandler and Michael Vick and Matt Ryan, did a great job throwing me away from defenders. And if the ball was in the 3-foot area of my body, I had a real good shot of bringing it down. And I prided myself on tough catches over the middle, sideline grabs, fade routes in the end zone. Those type of things kept me going for a while. So those are some of the things that had got me going and kept me in the league as long as I was, even though I wasn't the fastest guy out there.
And Brian, your career really started blossoming in Atlanta under Coach Reeves, who's been a good friend of ours on this show, back in the 2001-2002 arena there. And you guys, you had a lot of success there. Tell us about Coach Reeves, your relationship with him, and what he meant to your start of your career.
Oh, it's humongous. Coach Reeves, old-school football player, Ice Bowl up in Green Bay when he's playing with the Cowboys, and I feel like he respected the way I played the game because it was probably a little bit like he played, hard-nosed. I love playing special teams. My thing about football, and it's not a very fun sport to practice and be around a lot. Double days were brutal. Helmets hurt your head. Start practice, and by the time you're done, you need some Advil. But playing in games, there's nothing better for me. I wanted to be on the football field all the time, and playing special teams for the first time in the NFL gave me an opportunity to do that, but it took me a long time to learn how to do it, and he had patience with me learning how to do it. Joe DeCamillis was our special teams coach up here at the time. I think he's in Jacksonville now. But he really kind of brought me along with John Harbaugh, who was my special teams coach in Philadelphia my first year in the league. So a lot of different things take place for you to get to where you're at, and I was able to do that. But I love playing ball, and Dan Reeves trusted me. So my second full year really playing a lot of football with Chris Chandler, I think I had 23 catches, 3 touchdowns, and I averaged 21.3 yards per catch. And that was Dan Reeves just dialing up the offense, finding little holes for me, trusting who I was on third down. And that carried over to the next 2 or 3 years where we had a play called, it was I right, Z Sadie. And you can get to it in different formations and sets, but it was just a I formation. I was out to the right. I was a Z receiver. I'd motion in or out, and then I'd have a choice route. And I was smart enough football player to read the defense, understand leverages, and it was 3rd and 3, 3rd and 4, 3rd and 6. I'd get to the sticks. I'd get open just enough for the quarterback to find me, and we'd move the chains. And that's a big part of football. Obviously, as you guys know, if you can move the chains on third down, you give yourself an extra set of downs and an opportunity to put some points on the board. So Dan Reeves was huge, 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 trusting in me, believing in me, and putting me in opportunities to win.
And Brian, let's talk a little bit about the Falcons and, you know, more, you know, what happened, what we saw happen with them this past season. The offense wasn't quite as potent as it was in 2016. They averaged under 18 points a game over the last 7 games, including the playoffs. Do you think that was due to making adjustments to Steve Sarkisian's offense, or was it something more than that?
I think that's exactly what it was. I think here's what happened. Sarkisian came in here and had to run Shanahan's offense for the most part. Kyle Shanahan broke a bunch of records here in Atlanta and some NFL ones as well. His second year here in Atlanta in 2016 with Matt Ryan and Julio Jones and Marvin and Taylor Gabriel and Cooper, everybody went crazy. And I think 13 different guys caught touchdown passes in 2016. Well, now you have a guy in Steve Sarkisian who really hadn't been in the NFL a long time and sure as hell hadn't called plays in the NFL. So now you got a guy coming in here learning an offense as an offensive coordinator. He had his own wrinkles and his own flavor, but they really kept the same verbiage. They did the same stuff that Shanahan did the 2 years prior, because Matt Ryan had just changed offenses 2 years early, and he wasn't about to do it again. You don't want your franchise quarterback changing offenses and verbiage year in and year out or every couple of years. It's not good for him. It's not good for the continuity of the team. So they kept the verbiage and a bunch of the same plays and really a similar playbook, but Sarkisian had to learn it. And when he came in, he had his hands full. And what he really struggled with was red zone creativity. And he couldn't figure out how to get guys open down there and make guys get in the end zone and score touchdowns. Too many field goals were kicked by our MVP last year, Matt Bryant, our field goal kicker, which is never what you want if you're playing in the NFL. I can promise you that. But he was special last year and kept his team in a bunch of games. But Sark had his hands full trying to call plays. He didn't get help much by the receiver core and tight ends at times with 30 drops, most in the NFL. I think 8 or 9 of those were turned into interceptions, tip passes, drop balls, and it just got ridiculous to a certain point where momentum slowed down and the offense couldn't click like it needed to. So I expect much better things from Sarkisian and this offense this coming season, having a second year to be able to call plays, realize which area your ways were, and guys playing better for him.
So to that end, you talk about the drop balls, the tip passes, and that sort of thing. When you look at Matt Ryan, any concerns about him? I mean, he went from being league MVP and the number one rated passer in 2016 to 15th rated passer last season. You look back at the touchdowns, the interceptions, 38-7 in 16 to 20-12 this past season. Any concerns about Matt Ryan? And can he duplicate the 2016? Can that come back in 18? Or is he more like what we saw this past season?
I think Matt needs to live closer to 30 touchdowns and 10 picks. He's probably been closer to 20, 22, and 12 for most of his career. The 2016 season was his best by a long shot, but I still think he has that ability to do that again. I don't know if it was Pro Football Focus or somebody rated him as one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL this year based off of everything that went in front of him. Drop passes, interceptions that weren't his fault, stuff that goes on in everybody's teams has a little bit of this, but he had a ridiculous amount of drop passes that turned into interception, game-changing type stuff where momentum switches immediately, and it really hurt him. So listen, Matt's going to get broke off. The Falcons know what they have. They have a guy that is a franchise quarterback that is in the top 10, and then every once in a while in the top 5 quarterbacks in the NFL. And I think he can repeat that. So is he closer to 2016 than 2017? I certainly hope so, and I think so. If he can live closer to that 30-10, I think he's going to be fine. 28 touchdowns, 12 picks, something like that is where Matt needs to be for this team to have another good run in the postseason. And as rough as it was, that team went 10-6 and won a postseason playoff game again. So defense is getting better. Offense will continue to get better under Sarkisian. Matt and Julio and the company will play better. Hooper will help out a little bit at the tight end spot, and things will start clicking again.
Brian, one more before we let you go. And as a former wide receiver, what do you make of the rumor that the league may actually change the pass interference penalty from a spot foul to a 15-yard penalty? Good change, bad change?
Yeah, I like it. I kind of do, especially after watching, you know, it was the Patriots against the Jaguars in the postseason. When you see that stuff happen and you look at it, and they just took deep shots to Brandon Cooks and hoped for a catch, an incomplete pass, or a pass interference. And next thing you know, you got a 45-yard game, and it's—I don't know—I didn't like it, and I didn't like the taste it left in my mouth. I think the first play from scrimmage for the Eagles against the Falcons in the postseason was a duck that Nick Foles threw down the field, but our two Bs ran into the receiver and it got pass interference. Next thing you know, they got a 35-yard game. I think that it's a good move. I wouldn't mind it at all. I think it's another advantage for the offense, and I think it'll even out the playing field a little bit for DBs that either get stuck in trouble, are out of position, need to grab and hold or whatever. That's the toughest job in the world, playing defensive back against some of these beasts that are out there playing receiver with the speed and the turning and everything else. So I like it. I think I'm for it, and it'll be interesting to see if they end up passing it with the competition committee this year.
Brian, before we let you go, remind our listeners, how can they stay up to date with all the things you're doing? How can they hear you on the radio? And then how can they follow you on social media as well?
Well, thank you very much. It's 680thefan.com. You can download our app if you're out of Atlanta and listen every day. They just moved our show. I think it was a promotion, although when I wake up at 4 in the morning, it doesn't feel like one. They moved our show from 9 to noon to the morning drive. So now I'm on 6 to 9 in the morning every day, Monday through Friday, down here in Atlanta on 680 The Fan. You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at bfin86. And we just try to stay involved around here in the Falcon community and do a bunch of charitable stuff with them and golf tournaments. And my wife and I have been giving back to the Atlanta area for a long time. So we'll continue to do that and be a part of the that charitable movement and continue to raise my 4 kids here in Atlanta and enjoy life at its finest.
Good for you, Brian. Thank you so much for coming back and being a part of the show again tonight. And for all you know, all the times you've been on the show over the last 6.5 years, we really appreciate you, Brian. We hope you come back and do it again soon. In between now and then, all the best to you and your family.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Hey, thanks a lot, Bob and Chris. I appreciate you guys having me again. Always enjoy it.
Take care.
All right. Take care, Brian. That is former Falcons wide receiver Brian Finneran. We've got our next guest, Craig Wolfley, hanging on the line. Right before we get to Craig, I want to give a shout-out to our good friends over at the Gridiron Greats organization. Folks, please help support a wonderful cause that's taking care of the guys who left so much of themselves out on the field. Remember, folks, these are the guys that played way back when they still had to get off-season jobs to support themselves and their families. It's organizations like this one that was started by Mike Dick, again, Gridiron Greats, who are there trying to help the guys we all grew up watching and reading about. Please go online to gridirongreats.org to see what you can do and how you can get involved.